Hello and welcome to Mac Power Users. My name is Stephen Hackett. I'm joined by my friend and yours, Mr. David Sparks.
Hey, Stephen. You ready to talk some iPad today?
Yeah, we got new iPads.
Yeah, we did.
That's fun.
We did. We had it in our outline. We wanted to talk about iPad like 3 or 4 months ago, and we're just waiting, and we finally got it.
Yeah. We kept going into Notion like bumping this down the schedule because it took a little while. But we're recording this the day after the Let Loose event, and lots of new iPads. Not all new iPads. The Mini still hanging out, but that's okay.
Yeah. Well, I guess before we get into it, we are the Mac Power Users. I'm David Sparks. Steven is with me here. We've been doing this show for a long time. If you've never listened before, today we're talking about the iPad, even though we're called the Mac Power Users. So figure that one out. On More Power Users today, we're going to be talking about the M4 and our thoughts about it and where it may show up next, which is kind of a fun source of speculation.
Always fun.
But I guess let's put some context on iPad, right? Because, you know, we didn't get one last year.
No, 2023 was a really, really quiet year for the iPad. All we had was that USB-C Apple Pencil. It's actually the first time since the iPad was introduced that they had no new hardware. And, you know, I don't think that's the end of the world. You know, a lot of products that Apple sells are sometimes on an 18-month cycle. In fact, individual iPad models have been that way for a long time. Like, you get a new iPad Air, iPad Pro, roughly every 18 months. But it was kind of like the stars aligned, and they didn't have anything. And I think that's kind of one side of the coin of the iPad in 2023. Yeah. The other side of the coin is it was confusing.
Yeah, because there's a lot of different products. And us nerds, we get confused easily. So let's start at the top. They had the iPad Pro, which is the top of the line, and 11 and 13 or 12.9-inch versions. That's always kind of the latest and greatest from Apple. Mm-hmm. It's been on the same design since 2018, I believe.
Yes.
And it's a solid iPad. I think kind of underlying all of this is the problem is the iPad has been very stable. Like, it, you know, they didn't make a new one last year. And I think there's probably very few people who were really itching to buy one because whatever iPad you have is probably doing the job for you.
Yeah. I think we're going to get to that towards the end of the show, but the hardware has been really good for a really long time. And in addition to the iPad Pro being at the top, and that design is so good, the flat sides, Face ID, over time, they have brought that design down through the iPad Air, and the iPad Mini picked it up as well. And then a couple of years ago, they updated the base iPad to the 10th generation. It's a whole sidebar about how Apple names the iPads compared to the Macs. I can't handle that today. Yeah. But then they also left the 9th gen around at a lower cost. That was the Touch ID with Lightning, kind of the classic iPad design with the rounder sides. And there was a lot of models. And it wasn't always clear when, if you were a nerdy person trying to recommend something, you know, to a family member or a friend, or if your family member or friend just walked into an Apple store, it's like, what do I get? What's the best fit for me? Especially on that low end, because the 9th and 10th gen were both hanging out down there. And so they did sort of clean that up this week. The 9th generation iPad is gone, and the 10th generation falls in price. So now all the iPads have flat sides. All of them have USB-C. There's still a lot of Touch ID, but it's in the, you know, the sleep-wake button, not in the home button. The home button's gone. So now they all kind of look like that iPad Pro from 2018. It's really kind of amazing. And I think unlike anything else in Apple's product line across the company, where one model, the iPad Pro, eventually kind of dictates how all of its siblings look and to a degree act.
It's a strange story, because the other thing that happened in 2023 is on the software side of the iPad, not much happened, right?
Yeah.
So did we not get new hardware? We didn't really get much advancement in the software. And I know I keep bringing this up. We've got a whole segment on it later, but one of the issues with the iPad has always been that it is very performant. It's got great chips in it. It's very powerful, and there's not that much you can do with it.
Yeah.
So it's like, when do you need the iPad Pro versus the entry level, you know, $300 yeah. and some dollar basic iPad? And I think people really struggle with that. That's another real source of confusion, because now we've got kind of like, you know, the basic, which is the 10th gen. You got the middle of the road, which is the Air, and then you got the top of the line, the Pro. But like, where do you draw those lines? And, you know, it's not quite like the Mac, where there's Mac software that can really push the top of the line Mac that really isn't possible on the lower end Macs. It's, for the iPad, it's all kind of a jumble.
It is. And it's different than the Mac, right? If you're looking at a Mac laptop, yes, the capabilities improve as you go up the line, but there's also like form factor changes, right? Do I want a thin and light? Do I want something with an HDMI port, you know, like the MacBook Pro?
Yeah.
And the decisions, I think, are a little, in some ways, a little easier on the Mac line, but because the iPad is an iPad, right? They're all the same physically. It's just you're kind of looking at screen size, maybe some capability, you know, what kind of Apple Pencil or keyboard accessory you want. It's just a different market than the Mac. And I think over the years, Apple has struggled with that a little bit and trying to, again, kind of steer people down the decision tree of like, which iPad should I get? I think that is a little clearer today, even though there's technically, I guess, a one more size. Because now we'll get to the iPad Air in a second, but now there's two of them.
Yeah.
But I do think they've done a better job now at distinguishing at least the Air and the Pro. And I think if you want an iPad mini, you kind of know you want an iPad mini. And if you just want to get the cheapest thing for your kid, there's the cheapest one. So I do think, even though the model number really hasn't changed, I do think it makes more sense now than it did.
You know, maybe we should, before we get into the new ones, we should just kind of put our stake in the ground and say, which ones do we have and what do we do with them currently going into the event? Because I think how we use them often informs what we think of these announcements.
Yeah, so I have the current iPad mini, and it is basically a media tablet for me. So it's TVs and movies and books and some YouTube. And, you know, I came to a point several years ago where I realized that working on the iPad just wasn't a good fit for me. And I was kind of tired of trying to shoehorn it in. And that basically coincided with me going laptop only and getting rid of a desktop and just having one computer. And so, yeah. If I'm going out to a meeting or have something, you know, I'm going to work outside the studio, I'll just take the MacBook Pro. And the iPad basically lives on my nightstand. And it's, like I said, basically a media tablet.
I thought you had an 11-inch Pro too.
So for a while I did. I do have this other slight use case where it is very handy sometimes. Like I just need to go take notes somewhere, and maybe the MacBook Pro isn't the best fit for that. So I did pick up a refurbished 11-inch Pro and gave one of my kids the iPad mini, but I ended up trading them back because I kind of missed the smaller size.
Yeah.
So now, you know, my youngest kid is using a refurbished, I think, M1 11-inch iPad Pro, which is overkill for his needs. But, you know, he's not due for an upgrade for like 9 years, so he's set for a long time.
Yeah. I had the iPad mini, but I ended up giving it to one of my kids, you know, as you do, right? So I missed that one because it was actually a very nice form factor. Like you said, for consumption and basic work, I actually find typing in portrait mode on the iPad mini actually pretty easy for me. You know, my thumbs just fit right. But I lost that one because my kid. And I have both 11 and 13-inch iPad Pros. Both vintage 2018, like when they first came out with the new design. At the time, I bought the 13-inch one, and at some point, I got a used 11-inch, just between, you know, family usage, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And my use case has been, for a long time, I've kept the 13-inch under my Mac as what I call kind of like a status, you know, board kind of iPad. And so I can play YouTube on it, I can do things on it, and it's nice. and it's good to have. But with the widgets, arrival of widgets on the Mac, I feel like it's less useful than it used to be. And because I'm always obsessive about desk space, and I knew that these new iPads were coming, I thought, well, that would be a good one to sell back. Mm-hmm. And then, so I have not had it on my desk for 2 or 3 months, and I haven't really missed it that much. And then I had the 11 inch, and that one was used when I got it, but it's fine. And that's the thing about these iPads, is they're fine. So both of these are 6 year old iPads, and they run great. And the 11 inch I use often. I keep on my desk, but I have a comfy chair in the studio, and quite often I'll sit there. If I'm not in Vision Pro, I answer email on it. I do day one entries on it. I actually do use AI-based dictation for writing stuff on it. I'll use it to manage my OmniFocus tasks. So it's a good utility player. And I like having a slab of glass that I can work on sometimes instead of a laptop. So I like having an iPad in my life. I use it for iPad things. I don't really push the envelope like Federico does. The stuff I do are apps that are made for the iPad, and I find use for it quite often. So I would like, going into this, I was thinking maybe I'll get a new one, but I'm also kind of confused because, well, we'll get to that later. But yeah, but the main one I use these days is the 11 inch. The other nice thing about the 11 inch is it does have a cellular radio in it, and I went ahead and turned that on. And I've got the perfect size bag from Waterfield that just holds the iPad 11 and a couple other things. So when I go and remote work at Disneyland or coffee shop or whatever, quite often that's the only thing I bring. And I like that with a little keyboard. So I use the iPad, and I use it as an iPad. We talked about this. I don't need to go over it again for listeners who already heard this. But for years, I tried to make the iPad into a Mac, and I had a moment of revelation, 2 or 3 years ago, that no, I just need to treat the iPad the way Apple does in the commercials. Like, what are they doing with it in the commercials? That's the stuff I need to do on iPad, and stop trying to fight it and turn it into something else. And once I did that, my relationship with iPad became much more pleasant, and I actually found I use it more because I'm doing stuff with it that's easy to do on an iPad, and I really like it. The other thing I do with it a lot is sheet music, because I play music. And all of it's digitized, so I like seeing that on the iPad.
Yeah.
And I also do a lot of 3D design on it. I've got really into the Shaper 3D app, designing things for my 3D printer or for the wood shop. And I can sit in front of the TV while my wife's watching Hallmark movies, and I can design stuff in Shaper 3D with my pencil. And then I guess the last use case is a lot of times I will journal a day with the Apple Pencil in GoodNotes, and then just put that image into day one. And so I'll keep it on my desk for that too. So I have a lot of use cases for the iPad, and I think I'm definitely iPad interested whenever Apple's got new announcements. This episode of the Mac Power Users is brought to you by 1Password. Go to 1password.com/MPU right now to get 20% off your plan. Whether for yourself, your family, or your business, 1Password is the internet security solution you need. And for your business, 1Password has a brand new service called Extended Access Management. So here's the problem. 47% of the devices used in businesses are unknown to IT or security, or unmanaged. 82% of businesses allow personal devices for work, and people are using 2 times more apps than they were 5 years ago. Workers are more nimble now. They're using more apps. They're using their personal devices. They're finding ways to get it done. But that creates a problem for your security. That's the problem that Extended Access Management solves. It allows you to secure unmanaged applications and devices that are commonplace in the modern work environment. Extended Access Management is a comprehensive approach to user access that empowers companies to extend their policies in a way that allows employees to use the tools they need to be productive while ensuring that access is secure across identity, device used, applications accessed, and location. With Extended Access Management, you can secure access to all applications from any device for approved identities and only approved identities with 1Password. It's a powerful new system that accepts the reality of the modern workplace, where every identity is authentic, every app is secure, and every device is healthy. This is just one more service you can get with 1Password, in addition to all the powerful password and secure data management services it already provides. I'm a big 1Password fan. I have been since the app was brand new so long ago. I have a family plan. Everybody in my family uses it, and they all have good password habits because of it. But don't just take my word for it. Head over to 1Password.com/MP right now. You can set it up for yourself, your family, or your company. If you have a company, definitely check out this new extended access management program. It solves a huge problem and vulnerability that a lot of companies currently have. That URL, one last time, 1Password.com/MPU. Go there and get 20% off and start protecting yourself today.
Let's start with the new iPad Air. So this is kind of the mainstream, middle-of-the-line iPad. It had been rumored, I feel like for a long time, that they were going to go to two sizes, so the 11-inch and the 12.9-inch. And here's where we need to have a sidebar about rounding. So the iPad Air is this; those are the same sizes as the outgoing iPad Pro. Apple has just decided to call it 13-inch after years and years of making us all say 12.9. It is the same size. So just because the name is different, it's the same size screen. But 11 and 13, much easier to say. And it's not unusual. I mean, on the Mac, Apple rounds sizes all the time. Like, forever, the 13-inch laptop has actually been 13.3 inches, and we just say 13. Like, it's totally fine to round. But there's a lot of old iPad Pro in this new iPad Air.
Yeah. And the 13-inch, the existence of the 13-inch model, I think, is significant. I know people in my life that love the iPad. Like, you know, these are like one person in particular is one of my sisters who doesn't have a Mac. She had a Mac for years, and now she does everything on her iPad. She absolutely loves it, and she doesn't do complex things. So she's like kind of in that ideal iPad customer fit, but she always wants the big one. And she's bought two now 13-inch iPad Pros over the years, and she does not need an iPad Pro. She doesn't need those advanced features. She probably doesn't even realize they're on it. And I always felt like it was kind of weird that she needed to buy a Pro just to get the big one. And now she doesn't. So whenever she's ready for a new one, I will absolutely point her at the 13-inch Air. And This is kind of in alignment with other stuff Apple's been doing. They did this with the phone. They did this with the MacBook Air. And I'm all for it. I think there's a lot of people that want a bigger something, whether it's a laptop, a phone, or an iPad, and making them buy the Pro model with features they don't need was dumb. And now they've fixed that.
Yeah. I mean, I think this will be the 13-inch Air will be like my dad's next iPad. So my dad is all iPad. Like, he doesn't have a computer. And this past year, I gave him my old Pro Max. And he's like in love with the bigger size. I was like, wait until I tell you about a big, cheap iPad. At least cheap relative to the Pro. I do think it will do well. There have been reports that the plus size phone may be struggling a little bit in sales. I suspect the big iPad Air will do better than that, because this is not something you're carrying in your pocket, right? It's something that, you know, you have at home or in your bag. And I think that a lot of people are going to like that increase in size. And not necessarily for things like Stage Manager or Split View. Like, I think a lot of people just want their apps to be bigger and take up more space, and, you know, their video to be bigger. Or, like, you know, you mentioned Sheet Music. Like, I know people who have gotten the big iPad Pro for that use case who do not need an iPad Pro otherwise. And,
yeah,
you know, we've had feedback on the show in the past, actually. Maybe a couple of months ago, we were talking about Sheet Music in particular. We got quite a few notes from people of like, yeah, I'm using the big one, but boy, I wish I didn't have to spend the money, you know? So I think they're going to find a good market fit there.
Yeah. And, you know, whenever I hear people say like they're disappointed in the sales, like the bigger iPhone, I kind of take issue with that. It's like, yeah, they made a different size, and one size is definitely going to be more popular than the other. but there are a bunch of their customers that like the big one. And it's not, you know, who cares if it's a smaller percentage? I feel the same way about the mini. There should be an iPhone mini. I mean, Apple could make three, you know. They do in the iPad. They make three sizes. So I kind of take issue with that. It's like, yeah, I mean, at the volume of iPhones, even disappointing is going to be millions of iPhones.
Right. It would be huge, you know, for anybody else.
So just like, we get it. We made one that's not as popular as the other one, but the people who want the big one want the big one. And let's not make them pay for a pro phone. Anyway, I guess I'll get off my soapbox there. Front-facing camera on the landscape side. This is now throughout the line.
Hallelujah.
You know, it's like this is, feels like one that we can't really congratulate them on. It's been overdue for so long. But, you know, as early, you know, even before COVID, we all kind of realized that when you use an iPad for video conferencing, that you often have a keyboard on it. And you've got it in kind of what I call laptop mode. And it's always been weird. I always know when I'm talking to somebody on an iPad because they're always looking to the, was it the right of the camera? And it's just, I'm glad they fixed it. You know, we can move on now.
Yeah, I think the iPad has been a horizontal device for a long time, you know, and I think that keyboard lifestyle, like I think lots of people are doing that. You know, even if it's not an iPad, just in a folio case and like sitting it upright on a table or something. It has made no sense to me that this was still in Apple's mind, or at least according to their design, like a vertically oriented device for so long.
The Air got stereo speakers. I guess it sounds like they pulled a lot of features out of the old iPad Pro for the new Air, you know?
Yeah. When I look at this thing, I definitely see that. And I think that, you know, things like the speakers and the camera, like those are important aspects to the iPad experience. Cause for a lot of people, it's a very common use, FaceTime calls, video, that sort of thing. The other thing I got from the old iPad Pro, is the M2 chip, right? So several years ago now, Apple moved from the A series chip in the phone to the M series chip on the Mac in the high-end iPads. And there was some controversy years ago about like Stage Manager was going to be limited to the M chips. And then, you know, like they worked through all that. That's all, you know, in the past now. But it is getting the M2. If you need that much power in an iPad, like I don't know, but it is here. They are continuing to move the ball forward. And as we get to the iPad Pro in a few minutes, like they've really taken a big leap there. But it goes to the point earlier, the new iPad Air is a lot like the old iPad Pro in terms of the features and some of the accessories. You know, it still has Touch ID, and it's both sizes are the liquid retina display, so they're the LCD. The mini LED that was on the 12.9 inch iPad Pro, like that's gone from the line. There are some slight differences, but I was curious, I wanted to ask you about this. You know, my iPad mini obviously has Touch ID, but you've got Face ID on yours, and, you know, the iPad Pros and stuff floating around my house have Face ID. Like, do you have a strong preference one towards the other on the iPad?
I think I like Face ID. I prefer it if I can. The you know, you don't have to do anything. You just turn it on and you're in. But yeah, I don't, I guess if I had a preference, it'd be Face ID.
Yeah, Face ID is really nice on an iPad. And I mean, you get used to the Touch ID. Like, it's just on the sleep wake button. So you just kind of, you know, you put your finger on it. And I will say that the trick with the Touch ID on the iPad is to enroll fingers on both hands. So if you're holding the iPad, you know, because they're kind of, if they're not in a keyboard, the orientation doesn't even really matter on an iPad. And that way, whatever, like, I do my index fingers on my iPad, whichever side the button happens to be on the way I picked it up, I don't have to like rotate the device in my hand or like reach around in a weird way to hit the Touch ID sensor. And, you know, all these products with Touch ID allow multiple enrollments of different fingerprints. And that really makes life easier with one of these things.
Yeah. I'll tell you one thing I'm disappointed with is the colors. You know, it seems like colors? Apple just Yeah, they just keep getting more and more boring with the colors. And this is the Air, the one that's supposed to be kind of delightful and colorful. You know, it's four colors, and they're all, it's like a colors with the opacity turned way up, right? Blue, purple, starlight, space gray. And I don't know. Be bold one year, Apple.
I know.
You know.
I know.
Just do it.
Jason Snell has this funny thing that he says, of like, as you move up the product line, you get less exciting color options. He's like, the iPad Pro.
Yeah, just, more muted.
Yes, yeah. Silver and space black. The base iPad, the 10th gen, does have some fun colors. But what I really wanted, or what I still want, is the back of the iMac colors. Those are the best colors Apple has, and I think that they've done in a long time. Like that teal and the orange and the purple and the yellow, like that would be so sick on an iPad. And I get it, most people are going to use it in a case, but like, you're doing colors. Like, I just wish they would turn the vibrancy up. You know, I think these colors are pretty boring. It's a bummer.
I was so convinced when those iMacs came out that we were going to see that stuff on the MacBook Air and see it on the iPad Air, and that just never came true.
Yeah, maybe one day.
Storage. They doubled the base storage. Hooray. So instead of 64 at the base level, you get 128.
Yes.
And that's nice. And you can get up to 1 terabyte on your iPad. What's the use case for 1 terabyte, Stephen? Why do people need that much?
I mean, I think the only use case for that much storage on an iPad is media, right? Like, you're downloading a lot of stuff for offline viewing, you know, from Netflix or Hulu or Apple TV or whatever. If you want all your photos locally and you just have a giant photo library, but generally I feel like on the iPad, you know, somewhere in the 256 range is probably fine for most people. The 64 gig starting point they had was too low. And so I was very pleased that they moved it to 128. But I think for most people, 256 is kind of in that sweet spot. You know, you can have a lot of your photos locally. You can still download some stuff. But I don't know if many people need to go all the way up to 1 terabyte.
Yeah. Another use case would be if you do editing on the iPad. If you do Final Cut Pro editing on the iPad, you want more storage. But
yeah,
I think most people don't need it. And Apple charges a lot for those storage bumps. I mean, they
do.
That's one place where they really get you. So don't pay for it unless you really need it.
Yeah.
Pricing. So $599 for an 11-inch, $799 for a 13-inch. It is the, like we were saying earlier, kind of the middle of the line iPad. And I think those are fair prices for a very powerful piece of hardware.
Yeah, I think so too. I was a little curious what they were gonna do with the larger size. Like, were they gonna go to maybe $849? I'm glad they kept it at $200 difference. You're right though, the upgrade as you move up storage, like, that can really get you on an iPad. But I feel like $599 for the starting price is mostly fine. You know, you do have the 10th gen iPad, which is noticeably less. And one thing that, you know, kind of goes hand in hand with what we were talking about earlier about iPad hardware longevity, like, do not be shy about looking at the refurbished iPads. You know, the iPad Pro, the 11 inch that I had bought, that now my youngest son is using for basically for games, it's fine. It was a refurbished one because, look, an M1 iPad Air is going to be fantastic for years and years. And very often you can get a refurbished one with maybe more storage or something at a lower price than new. Obviously, that doesn't work if you're shopping for the 13-inch. But if you're looking at the 11-inch and, you know, you're on an iPad Air that's, you know, or a regular iPad that's, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, you're looking to upgrade, that is a really good alternative. And we've spoken about the refurbished store a lot over the years. They're warranted as new. You can add AppleCare to them. And the trick is, though, that the stock changes pretty often. And so if you're looking for something specific and it's not there, give it a few days, look again. And this is on Apple.com, right? It's in the Apple Store app on iOS as well. It's coming from Apple. You know, it's not refurbished from some random Amazon seller. It's coming from Apple. They do a really good job on those, and they warranty them as new. And I think that could be a great way if you're looking to upgrade this time around and like, it's a little more than I want to spend once I spec it up, or you don't necessarily need something that the new ones offer and you were kind of waiting, that's a really good alternative. And that's something that, especially with iPads, I think is a pretty viable route. This episode of Mac Power Users is brought to you by ExpressVPN. How did you choose your internet service provider? Well, if you're like me, sadly, you had very little choice because most ISPs have a lot of control in the regions they serve. They can then use this control to take advantage of customers, data caps, streaming throttles, the list goes on. But worst of all, many ISPs log your internet activity and could sell that data to other companies or for advertising. You can protect all of your devices with ExpressVPN, which means ISPs won't be able to see your internet activity. So what is ExpressVPN? Well, it's a simple app for your computer or smartphone that encrypts all of your network data and tunnels it through a secure VPN server so your activity stays your activity. Just think about how much of your life is on the internet. Every site you visit or message you send could be tracked and used without your permission. ExpressVPN is the best way to keep your information private. You just download the app, tap one button on your device, and you're protected. And ExpressVPN does all this without slowing down your connection. That's why it's rated the number one VPN service by CNET. I've been using ExpressVPN for years, and I love the speed. A lot of these other services really do slow down your traffic, but ExpressVPN is lightning fast. You can stream no problems. So stop handing over your personal data to ISPs and other companies who want to profit from your information. Protect yourself with the VPN that many trust to keep them private online. Visit expressvpn.com/MPU. That's ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN.com/MPU to get 3 extra months for free. Our thanks to ExpressVPN for the support of the show and Relay FM.
All right, so let's talk about the sexy one, the new iPad Pro. Apple released a brand new iPad Pro. This isn't what I would exactly call a redesign, but it is. It does feel different from the 2018 design in a couple key ways.
Yeah, I've got hands-on blog posts from our friends Jason and Federico in the show notes. These things are noticeably thinner and lighter. So, and John Turner said it in the keynote, but Apple's talked about this for a long time, that the iPad is a magical sheet of glass, and they are closer to that now than ever. The 11-inch is 5.3 millimeters thin and is a little under a pound. But the 13-inch, I think, is the one that's really impressive. And in reading these blog posts, that's the one that people are really impressed with. 5.1 millimeters thin, which we're going to come back to what that means, and 1.28 pounds. So both of these lost considerable thickness and weight. And there's a photo in Federico's blog post with the iPad Pro with a Thunderbolt cable plugged into it. And the plastic housing on the Thunderbolt port, you know, that you kind of put your fingers on to pull it in or put it out, that's thicker than the iPad. Like the USB-C port, the Thunderbolt port, is basically as thick as these devices. I mean, in photos and the hands-on I've read, it's drastically different.
Yeah, that's nice. I do wonder about that. Like, how likely are these to bend with that thinness, especially on the 13 inches, which is even thinner than the 11 inch. I'm not really sure why that is. Maybe, I guess, there's more room to spread the battery out.
Yeah, I don't know. I was curious about that as well. And that was sort of my thought. It's like, well, there's more area. So, you know, volume is, you know, width, height, length. Maybe they can rearrange that in a way. Super interesting. And Apple compared it to the iPod Nano, which, like, I did not have on my bingo card. The iPod Nano was going to be in a keynote, let alone an ad that's floating around social media. But thinner than the thinnest iPod Nano. And Apple did say in the keynote and in their marketing that it's just as strong as before. Now, look, there will be a YouTuber who bends this thing, right? Like, that's, if it's in a backpack and you close your car door on it, it's going to bend. But it seems like Apple's learned their lesson from, like, the 6 Plus back in the day. And, you know, that phone actually was kind of prone to bending. I think they're going to hopefully be just fine.
Yeah, me too. And lots of colors, any color you want, so long as it's silver or space black.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like Jason says, the color options get worse as you move up the line.
Yeah, I really want to get my hands on it to appreciate the size and weight. You know, I need to kind of like touch one. So I'm looking forward to going to the Apple store and checking them out. Forever, we've been getting rumors that it's going to have an OLED screen. And not only does it have an OLED screen, it has an Ultra Retina XDR screen.
Yeah. Yeah. This was the other kind of big rumor that they were going to be moving to OLED, which of course we've had on the iPhones now for quite a while. But it's clear that Apple's done some of their own sort of special sauce on top of OLED here. Because one downside of OLED is brightness. And Apple wants these displays. They call it XDR, but you know it's high dynamic range, and they want to really push that on the iPad Pro. And so what they've done is they've basically sandwiched two OLED panels together. They're calling it tandem OLED, which just makes me think of those like bikes you see like couples riding on the beach. They're doing this, and it's all kind of powered by the processor, which we'll get to. So it's 1600 nits peak HDR brightness, and you get the magic of OLED, like really deep blacks, vivid color. I think this thing is going to look incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm that's again, something I just want to see it,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, the idea of laying two OLEDs on top of each other, that also was in the rumor mill for a while, but you know, that's what happened. And that's cool, man. 1,000 nits, a standard 1,600 nits peak HDR brightness. It's going to be bright. And if you use it in the sun, they've got a nano texture one as well, which is interesting, right? I guess it's very small divots in the screen to stop it from reflecting light.
I've got some information about this, actually.
Okay, good, because I have questions.
Yes, so when nanotextures showed up on the Pro Display XDR and like that one-off iMac and now the Studio Display, that is how they did it. It was like micro etching on the glass. And with that came trade-offs in terms of durability, I guess you could say. Like you got to clean it with a special cloth. Don't touch it. I was afraid of it. Like my Studio Display is the regular glass, which is fine. Like the way my office is built, I don't have any sun coming in over my shoulder, so it's fine. Obviously, that's problematic on an iPad, which you're touching all the time, and it's got to work with the Apple Pencil, right? That's the other thing.
Is it going to feel crunchy when you write on it with an Apple Pencil?
Right. Yeah. And so this nano texture is, while the effect is the same, very low reflectivity, it kind of scatters the light. This is done chemically. So it is not quite the same construction process. And clearly they've done that to help alleviate some of the durability issues. Now, we'll have to see how this holds up in the real world, right? Like no one has seen these things beyond a hands-on for a little while. So I am curious about that long-term. I don't think Apple would ship this if they didn't believe that it's a good solution for what the iPad is. But just because the name's the same, like it seems like they've gone about it in a very different way.
Yeah, I have questions about sharpness with this. You know, sometimes I feel like those, like when you put those anti-reflective coating screens on them, it definitely affects sharpness of the screen. Again, this is just what we'll talk later about if we're going to buy anything, but I'm curious and I definitely need to get hands-on with this stuff. Another thing about nano texture is it's $100 more, but there's more than that. You have to buy at least a 1 terabyte storage model to get the nano texture, which is really a lot of money. I mean, because they really charge you to get up to 1 terabyte of storage. And if you don't need 1 terabyte, but you do want nano texture, you're getting 1 terabyte. So I guess also go ahead and buy a Leica camera at the same time, or I don't know.
Yeah, and the hands-on, it does seem like there maybe are some trade-offs in terms of contrast and maybe a little bit of clarity. But I think you kind of know if this is something you need. For me, you know, for me, I don't think it is.
I'm curious about it because I often use an iPad outdoors, mm-hmm. you know, and in the backyard, and when I go out and work remotely. So I'm nanotexture curious, but I'm also very hesitant to do it because I don't think I want to pay for 1 terabyte of storage. And I'm a little worried about this technology. How's it going to hold up? Because, you know, iPads do run a long time. Yeah. Is this something that's going to fall apart on me? Is the coating going to wear off, et cetera? So I'm not really sure what to think about that. One other thing I wanted to ask you, though, about these OLED screens is now that Apple has shipped them in a 13-inch screen, do you see these in future MacBook Pros, for instance?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, OLED has shown up other places in the PC industry. And of course, the MacBook Pros are using the mini LED technology now. Mini LED has always seemed like a bit of a stepping stone towards OLED. And if they can do it in the iPad with this level of brightness and precision, then I would imagine it's doable, at least on a laptop. You know, I don't know about when you're getting to like studio display size, but the studio display is still an LCD. So like it's even further behind. And the Pro Display XDR uses mini LED, but in it's a very different type of mini LED. Like it's not nearly as good as what they're shipping now. So I do think at some point things will coalesce around OLED. I just don't know how fast that'll be.
All right, cameras and microphones. What changed?
So they ditched the ultra wide on the Pro. That's the first thing that jumped out at me when they showed the back of this thing. And, you know, I guess maybe they have, they have user info saying that wasn't widely used, or maybe there was a trade-off somewhere. Maybe that trade-off was the thickness of the device. You know, maybe they couldn't even fit the sort of, trickery they're doing on the zoom lens. I don't know. It's a curious thing, but I don't know if it's a big deal. Like, I don't know if people are going to be riding over the lack of it.
I don't know that I've ever used any lens on my iPad to take a picture except the standard one. So,
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, most of what I've ever done on an iPad is scanning, which apparently is better on the new one, thanks to the M4.
Yeah.
But the LiDAR scanner is still there, and they are using a new adaptive True Tone flash to do some cool stuff with scanning. So, we've all done it, like you scan something and the shadow of your device is on the scan. And now they're looking at that. They're using AI. Remember we talked about AI recently? Like, and I think we said Apple's going to use that language instead of machine learning. All over the place in this keynote.
Yep. They vomited AI all over that presentation.
They really did. So they're going to use this flash to like help fill in or whatever. And then the front camera is now on the landscape side, like we said. And that does dictate some changes to the Apple Pencil, which we'll get to.
I mean, honestly, I take so many scans with my iPad, more than pictures.
Yeah.
When I take a picture, I just use my phone. I always figure my phone has the best camera system. It does. This iPad is 2018. So, but the fact that they made scanning documents better, I think, is very responsive to what people are using it for. So I'm thumbs up on that. I hope they do the same thing with the next iPhone. I'd like to see that feature bleed over.
Mm-hmm.
And then we heard about a week ago, Mark Gurman did a rumor where he said he thought they may be using an M4 in it. And I think, did we talk about it on the show? I think we may have brought it up in one of the more power users, but it just seemed ridiculous that they're going to put an M4 in the currently shipping Mac Studios M2, right? It's like, how are they going to do that? You know? But then as the week went along, more and more evidence started leaking that was indeed what they're going to do. If you get behind it, and we don't need to get into the nitty gritty on it, the M3 was the first 3-nanometer process. It's expensive. It's not the greatest. And I think it seems like Apple was kind of eager to get off M3 pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So that makes sense, along with the fact that they don't update these every year. So they probably wanted to put the M4 so it would still be current in a couple of years. But, you know, for whatever reason, M4, hooray.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really exciting to see Apple Silicon continue to move forward. It is wild that it's on the iPad first, and then more power users, like you said, we're going to talk about where we think it may go next. But there are some things that Apple says that they that are built into the M4 that they needed for this iPad. That display situation, the two OLEDs sandwiched together, right? That's a complicated thing. There's a new display engine in the M4 that Apple says is responsible for driving that thing. And it is 50% faster than the M2. So Apple continues to tweak the number of performance and efficiency cores in these things. This M4 has 4 performance and 6 efficiency cores. So it's a new CPU that no doubt is allowing for this radically thin design where you can have something so thin, keep it cool, keep 10 hours of battery life. A lot of that is the efficiency of the new process, I'm sure, the new node they're building this system on chip on. But also, like, there's a lot of stuff that just happens on those efficiency cores, so you don't have to heat up and spin up those performance ones.
Yeah, exactly. I think for most of us, especially the iPad, we're spending almost all our time in the efficiency cores.
I think so, too.
The GPU has 10 cores and support for mesh shading and ray tracing, although there's a bit of a caveat to that. They're binning. So if you get anything less than 1 terabyte storage, you're getting 9 cores, as I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
If you get the 1 terabyte version, they're doubling the RAM and you get the 10 core version of the graphics chip. I don't know that that really matters. I mean, 9 versus 10 graphics cores, I don't think most of us are going to notice.
No. And it's not the first time they've done it. They did this on, I think, notably the iPad Air for a while. It was like, 7 GPU cores or 8. It's like, okay, like, you know, it's like going 90 or 95 miles an hour. It's like both are too fast, yeah, you know, when the deer jumps out. So
yeah,
I think that's fine. Apple did spend, I felt like, a noticeable amount of time talking about the neural engine. And again, this is a shift from the machine learning language to AI. And Apple kind of called out, so in the x86 world, Intel and AMD have talked about the NPU. So these are cores on new processors designed for AI tasks. And there's some like long-term questions. Right now, a lot of AI stuff happens on GPUs. So like NVIDIA has been through the roof financially because they're selling every GPU they can make for AI data farming, basically. But in the consumer land where us normal people live, it's the NPU. So it's the neural engine that Apple's been doing. Apple said, look, the NPU's new. We've been doing neural engines for years. You know, that they, I felt like Apple's a little defensive about this. And I think they're right to be so. Like, they have been doing things here. They've just used different terminology. And so going back to that Gurman report, one thing Gurman said is like, well, the M4 is going to be all about AI. Well, a lot of us called foul on that because, like, look, these chips have been designed for a long time, right? They work many generations ahead of time. But this does have a more powerful neural engine. It's 16 cores. It can do 38 trillion operations per second, which seems like a lot to me. In an iPad that's
like... It's a lot of trillions.
In an iPad that's whatever it is, mere millimeters thick. But clearly they wanted to highlight it and say, look, you know, we're not being left behind. We've been doing this for a long time. And the hardware is evidence of that.
I also like that they explained the thermal envelope, because that is so unlike Apple. I mean, usually they say, you know, don't worry, your pretty little head. We put a big processor in it, everything's fine. But now they felt the need to explain that they're using copper and graphite sheets inside.
Yeah.
Including copper behind the Apple logo, which to me seemed just kind of cool.
I can't wait for iFixit to tear it down.
Yeah, exactly. I think one of the reasons why AI came up so much and they wanted to explain the neural engine is because they've taken some heat on Wall Street from people saying, well, Apple's not ready for AI and downgrade the stock. And that's where you get their attention when you start talking like that. So you're right. They probably did have a bit of a chip on their shoulder saying, hey, guys, we've been doing these, you know, AI chips on our silicon for many years now. This is not new.
It's interesting. I was thinking this morning about how it started, right? Neural engine in the beginning, There was some machine learning stuff, but a lot of it was for Apple's own uses, right? So a lot of it was, okay, we needed this for Face ID, or we need it for solutions in their own applications, like the, you know, object detection and photos, right? Very famously, Apple tries to do as much on device as possible. They don't really go to the cloud for that sort of processing. But I feel like there's a shift now. Like, all that stuff is still true. Apple's still using it for all their own things. But they're very clearly also talking about it now. It's like, this is available through these APIs for developers. And just, like, stay tuned for that. Because I think in 5 weeks when we're at WWDC, that's going to come back. And I think, in a way, this is sort of laying that groundwork. Again, it's all been true for a long time. But to your point, Apple has been forced to talk about it in new and increasingly frequent ways because of where the market is.
Yeah. And my theory was always that they didn't want to say AI because Apple wants to use its own terms. You know, it's just like, it's not going to say double OLED. It's going to say Ultra Retina XDR.
Yeah.
You know, they want to have their own terminology. And I think with AI, that was particularly true because AI could end up being a negative thing. A lot of people are going to lose their jobs because of AI. Right. So, but I think at the same point, they've now realized, no, we got to just say AI. so they're saying it. Overall, 2 times as fast as the M2 iPad Pro, 10 times faster than the original 2015 iPad Pro. And although I'm sure there's still some 2015 iPad Pros out there
working. Oh, yeah. Doing just fine. Doing just fine.
Dropped features. That was an interesting topic. SIM card slot is gone. There's no more SIM card slot on your iPad. It's all built in now.
Yeah, it's all eSIM. I thought this would be a good time to check in. You know, eSIM's been in the United States, at least, on the phones for several years now. And my cellular iPad mini is on eSIM. For me, it's been totally fine, right? I can, in the process to moving to a new device, it transfers over. A family member recently switched cell phone carriers, and they went from a physical SIM to an eSIM, and they had me help them with that. And it was very easy. Like, the eSIM just came to them in a link in the email. We applied it to their phone. So from my perspective, it's been pretty smooth. Have you had much experience interacting with it on your end?
Yeah, same thing. The few times I've needed to be concerned with it, it has not been a problem. So that's all good. You know, hooray. And then millimeter wave for 5G. I'm not clear. Do you know why that is removed? Is that, what's the story behind that? I thought that was still something useful.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Millimeter wave, I believe, is basically just in North America. And so maybe the use case wasn't big enough. I would love, if someone knows this and could tell me anonymously, I would love to know the percentage of iPads that are sold that are cellular. I just have no idea what that number is. But from there, how many are even in locations where millimeter wave? I don't know. I suspect we're going to hear more about this. Maybe it's when iFixit tears it down, there's something obvious why they didn't include it, or maybe down the road Apple will make a statement about it. That definitely kind of got my antenna up, so to speak, during the event. I feel like we're going to hear more about why that happened. You know, for me, like, I don't live in a big city, right? Like, you know, we have water and electricity, but Memphis is not necessarily a big city. I've had very little exposure to millimeter wave 5G on my phone. Now, I don't think it's ever been in Memphis. I think it's only been when traveling. Now, it's incredibly fast, but if you kind of do the Venn diagram of, like, iPads that are cellular on 5G in multimeter wave locations, like, a lot of places where millimeter wave has shown up are things like sports stadiums or airports. Oh, maybe not airports. There may be actually issues there, but dense areas, right? And are iPads in use in those situations on 5G? Like, I don't know. Maybe they just looked at the use and looked, it's not worth keeping this hardware in. Maybe it was a trade-off for the thinness. That was kind of my first thought of, like, maybe the way it's built doesn't work with the new enclosure, and so they dropped it. I don't know. But I think we're going to hear more about it.
Yeah, and I think it's really on the carriers. The carriers really have not gone nuts with the implementation, so maybe Apple feels like it's not worth supporting. The design, although we talked about a lot of design changes, the actual kind of squared off with a little bit of a round over on the edges, I feel like that is still the same treatment from what I can tell, although it's thinner. The ultra wide camera we've already talked about. Pricing changed.
Yeah, so they did go up. The base price is up $200. Now, they did go from 128 to 256 gigabytes of storage as base. So like that, if you factor that in, like that can help explain the cost. Look, I'm sure these are more expensive to build, especially the 11-inch, which was using still an LCD panel. But the 11-inch used to start at $799. Now it's $999, and the 13, $1099 to $1299. So if we go back to the iPad Air, which was what, $599 and $799, it's a significant jump. It's what, $400 to go from an Air to a Pro? When I was talking at the top of the show about distinguishing those two products, there's design, there's displays, which I think is a big deal. And then there's price. I feel like the iPad Pro has given the iPad Air some more room now in the line.
Yeah, I feel like those double OLED screens are probably the biggest explanation for the price increase.
Got to be.
I don't think that was easy, and I don't think it's cheap. And they probably got a lot of failed units. Like when you build those, you've got to lay two OLEDs on top of each other, and they've got to both work perfectly. I would imagine they have a lot of them that don't quite work out.
Yeah, that yield could be rough.
Yeah. Something we didn't get that I was hoping we'd get, because I'd heard this in the rumors off and on over the years, is a MagSafe like charging device, like where you could connect a puck to the back of it or something. I would have liked that, frankly. I think that I would definitely love the MagSafe lifestyle with my phone. I would have liked it on the iPad as well. But hey, you don't get everything.
No. And I mean, on the software side, what I want is I want to put my iPad on something. And of course, MagSafe makes it easy. But give me that, you know, that home status board type thing that, you know, you've built and you've written a lot about. But it's on the iPhone, right? You can have that, you know, you put your phone sideways and you get the widget standby mode. The iPad just, to me, feels like it's crying out for that. And
yeah.
And I mean, there's lots of things we could say about lock screen widgets on the iPad, like they're in that side rail. It's kind of weird. It would be so cool for Apple to take a better approach when it comes to the iPad, when it's in sort of, hey, it's just hanging out on my desk. What could it do for me? And, you know, maybe that'll come at Dub eventually, but MagSafe and like standby, all that's kind of wrapped up. And I agree. It's a little disappointing to see that not show up, but maybe one day. Fingers crossed.
Well, I think if they did a standby for the iPad, we would not see it at a product announcement.
Yeah.
Via WWDC.
No, that's true. So, that's true.
Yeah. Hopefully June.
You never know.
This episode of the Mac Power Users is brought to you by NetSuite, the leading integrated cloud business software suite. Learn more at netsuite.com/MPU. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, multiple systems, and delivering your product or services, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. As a business lawyer for nearly 30 years, really that's what it comes down to, getting control of your performance, your metrics, and how your system all works together. Companies that figure this stuff out are the companies that last, and NetSuite can help you get there. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/MPU, that's NETSUITE.com/MPU. And our thanks to NetSuite at netsuite.com/MPU for their support of the Mac Power users and all of Relay FM.
A large part of the iPad story is the accessories. You know, for really since the beginning, Apple's had keyboards and cases and all sorts of things for the iPad. And I want to start with the Apple Pencil Pro. So this is a new high-end Apple Pencil. It's $129. It works with the new iPad Pro and the new iPad Air. It looks a lot like the existing Apple Pencil. And you say, well, why can't I just keep using my old one? Well, we got to go back to that landscape camera. The charging and the magnets and stuff are basically where the landscape camera is. Like, they had to kind of rearrange all that stuff. But they took the opportunity to, I mean, to really, I think, meaningfully improve what the Apple Pencil can do. Do you want to walk us through some of the new features?
Yeah, I mean, they got some new gestures. So the first one, which was rumored, but I think it's cool, is squeeze. So you can squeeze it, and it looks like the default behavior is to open up a palette. That's what they showed it. So if you're in like a drawing app and you squeeze it, you get a palette to change the pen or the thickness or the weight or the color. So that's cool. So that's another gesture, which frankly is easier than a double tap. I find the existing double tap sometimes hard to land. One that I hadn't heard about that seems really cool is barrel roll. They put a gyroscope inside of it so you can twist it, and you can, again, probably adjust brush width or whatever the software developer wants to do. My guess is there's going to be a kit for this, so
yeah,
you can really make it work. Like I said, I'm doing a lot of 3D design with the Apple Pencil, and I think that'd be cool to be able to like even use the barrel roll to change or rotate an object as you're working on it. Haptic feedback. That is something that I didn't see coming. It's got a haptic engine inside right where you hold the pen, so you'll get confirmation when you do things, which I think has been missing. It's one of those things you're like, oh yeah, we did need that, because so often you double tap and you're not sure if it clicked or not, and then you do it again and you cause all sorts of mayhem. Now you got haptic feedback. So yeah, good on Apple. I like that feature set. And they did say that all that is going into Pencil Kit, which is the development platform, and I guess you'd call it an API that lets people do stuff with Pencil. And they had a nice demo from Procreate. You know, the Procreate is such a great app.
Yeah, that demo was really impressive. And when they were talking about it, I was like, the barrel roll, what a great name. Like, can we just say for a second?
Yeah.
Fantastic name. From the company that brought you Tandem OLED, you also get barrel roll. But it wasn't clicking for me. And then in the video, the artist has an object above a background. And as they're moving the pencil, they're turning it in their between their finger and thumb, and the artwork is rotating on the screen. And that's when it clicked for me. Again, I'm not an artist, I'm not an animator, like this feature will not make a difference in my life personally. But I was like, oh, this is adding new dimensionality to what you could do with the Apple Pencil. And I don't know. It seems like if you're in this world, this could be a really big deal. I'm really looking forward to getting feedback once these things are out in the world, what people are doing with it. Because like you said, it's in Pencil Kit, so Apple Notes and, you know, GoodNotes, like all the apps will get this stuff, but then developers can customize it. And I think things like Procreate may even add modality so you can tell it what you want to happen at a barrel roll, but it seems really cool. I would not be surprised if Apple, in fact, I basically know this, Apple spends time with people in these fields to see what they want and what makes sense for them, what they're missing. And my guess is that this feature comes out of those conversations.
Yeah, and the other banner feature that we've never had before is Find My support. So
yeah,
if you misplace your pencil, you can find it. And, you know, amen to that one.
Especially at $129, you know?
Yeah, I have a collection of pencils here because I thought I lost one, then I bought a new one, and then I found it. So, you know, I've got two. So this would be nice. I would not have to do that again. So very nice. The more Find My support they can put in stuff, the better.
Agreed.
It only works with the iPad Pro and the iPad Air, though. That's the new, because of the charging system and the camera, is my understanding.
Yes. And that does lead to sort of the elephant in the room. Like, there's four Apple Pencils for sale. I think that's
a lot of Apple Pencils.
It's a lot of Apple Pencils, but I think it's temporary. I think if the iPad mini and the base iPad, if they get updated to support, you know, the landscape camera and this charging, because the base iPad has a landscape camera, but it was before this pencil was done. And so it's kind of in betweeny land right now. So that's where the USB-C pencil comes with a little sliding thing and you plug a USB-C cable into it. But if you look at the Apple Pencil webpage, there's a link in the show notes, those older Apple Pencils will fade off that page over time. You know, they sell accessories for iPads that are still out there, and there's a bajillion iPads out there. So they are still selling Apple Pencils today that technically no new iPad supports, but I think that's a matter of time, and I suspect in a year or two, we're basically going to have the USB-C Apple Pencil, kind of the basic one, charge it with a USB-C cable, and if you want the fancier one, that's available to you as well. I think we're in a transition here. We talked at the beginning of the show, the iPad hardware always seems like it's in transition, but I don't think Apple loves that they're selling and making and keeping up with four Apple Pencils, but I think it'll get better with time.
And then we got a new Apple Magic Keyboard. And this one is just for the iPad Pro. It doesn't work even with the new iPad Air. But again, to your point, there's now three keyboards for sale from Apple. But this is the top of the heap now. And that begins with the function keys.
Yeah. Function keys on an iPad. Who would have guessed? They are very much like the Magic Keyboard for the Mac, where, in fact, they don't even have function key printed on them, so they don't say like F3, F4, F5. You know, their screen brightness and search and do not disturb and media controls. I'm looking forward to never going into Control Center again on an iPad, right? If I get one of these down the road, because a lot of that stuff will just be on the keyboard now, and I think it's a great addition. I'm super psyched.
Yeah, it still uses that cantilever design where the device kind of tilts out over the keyboard. And if you look at Apple's website, it looks like that picture is very carefully taken to make it look like the device doesn't lean over the keys. Looking at like Federico's on-site images, it looks to me like maybe it does, depending on how much you tilt it.
Yeah.
So you still kind of have that weirdness where it feels like some of the keys are under the monitor, but that's just a function of that design. But I guess, again, I need to just see one and get my hands on it to make a decision. It's also got a larger trackpad. Yay.
Yeah. Glass trackpad with haptic feedback. So it is like the MacBooks now, so it should be silent when you click and give you that little bit of feedback. So I suspect the trackpad and the pencil are like, they're going to feel alive in a way with all this haptic feedback that we haven't had before. So I think those are both good moves. I suspect this keyboard is going to feel very familiar if you've ever used a MacBook.
Yeah.
And that's good. That's how it should be.
Yeah, I agree. And then white and black. No backlit keys. I think it's largely the same kind of design, although it does have aluminum on the front, as I understand it, but I suspect the back is still kind of that textured rubber plastic stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's how it looks like in the hands-on. So the keyboard well is aluminum. So I think it's going to feel way more premium than the outgoing one, but it's still kind of rubbery and that's on the outside. I think they look great. I think really, like, if you kind of zoom out, it's like, oh, this is both, it's both very Mac-like, but then you close it and it's like, oh, this is also like an iPad. Like, they've kind of bridged these worlds in a weird way, but I think it looks great. And I think if you're an iPad Pro user and you want a keyboard, I think people are going to be really happy with this.
The price is still quite expensive. So the 11 inch is $299 and the 13 inch is $349, which I believe is more than an entry level iPad, like the keyboard. If memory serves, the entry level iPad, I think, is at $329.
These get pricey, but they are the cost.
That's the same.
Yeah. They're the cost of the old Magic Keyboard, which I think is good. And if you go way down to like the base iPad, the Magic Keyboard Folio is still around, but yeah, I think it looks sweet. And I think it's a good evolution of where they've been with the Magic Keyboard. They've kind of taken the things people wanted, right? People wanted a function row. They wanted a bigger trackpad. They wanted aluminum. They've done all of that. And for me, and then you mentioned it, the low hanging fruit now is backlit keys. That'd be so awesome. I use that on my MacBook Pro all the time, and you know, they can figure it out. I have faith that at some point they'll get there.
Yeah, but it's not, you know, getting a new iPad Pro with the keyboard and the pencil, it's expensive. I mean, it's going to probably run you more than a MacBook Air.
Yeah, you're definitely in laptop territory, but the iPad Pros, at least hardware-wise, is more laptop-like than ever, especially with that keyboard. And, you know, it does break compatibility with the old keyboard, right? You can't use your old keyboard with the new iPad. I still kind of feel weird about that. I wish that wasn't the case, but clearly something design wise just doesn't work there for them. You know, maybe it's the thickness when you close it or something else, but you are looking at kind of upgrading both if you're coming from an older iPad Pro. This episode of MPU is brought to you by Indeed. We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. So ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed just doesn't help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Hiring is really important, and it can be really time-consuming. Finding the right person with the right experience at the right time is complicated, and Indeed makes it easier and faster than ever. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use it, the better Indeed gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/MPU. Just go to Indeed, INDEED, Indeed.com/MPU. Go there and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this, your favorite podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Our thanks to Indeed for their support of the show and Relay FM.
Okay, so we've been talking about the hardware, but we've been dancing around the software. And that always is the discussion. I mean, how many times has Apple had iPad events and we say, this hardware is awesome, but we're not sure what we're going to use it for. You know, I mean, I really have a question in my own mind. I have a 2018 iPad Pro that's working fine, and I'm not sure that buying any of these is going to make anything I run better. And this is the common refrain. Apple tried to address it a bit because they talked, about the Pro apps getting updates, and that's not normal for these product announcement days.
Yeah, I was glad to see that. So Final Cut and Logic for the iPad and also for the Mac, but mostly for the iPad were updated. this is the section where they said AI a bunch of times. Logic is the simpler of the two. One really cool thing, and they're using, again, they're using machine learning slash AI for this, is taking a flattened song, like an exported song, and breaking it into stems. And so can you explain, I think you can explain better than me what stems are and why it's important.
I would have given a kidney for this when I was a kid playing a lot of music. So it's like you just take a music track. Let's say you've got a recording and you want to have control over the bass, the piano, the singer, you know, the instrument, whatever. And in the old days, you only had one track, so you didn't have any way to separate those things. And people over the years have come up with ways to separate this stuff, but it's always been difficult. I mean, I remember years ago when they made a movie about Charlie Parker, they were able to separate him and his old recordings, and then they brought in new musicians to record the background pieces so it sounded better. And it was a massive project. Well, now you can do it on your iPad with AI. And I have to try it. I'm very curious to see it, but it's very powerful because then you have individual tracks for bass, piano, drums, whatever, and you have control over them, or you can turn them off and replace them with something else or do whatever. It's just a very powerful tool for working on music. And again, something that used to take a team of people much money and time to do, you can just do on your iPad. Crazy.
It's really cool. And I think that people are going to find a lot of unique uses for that. The other thing Logic got was additional session players. So previously Logic Pro had basically a drummer in it that you could set parameters and it would play with you. Now they've added bass players and keyboard players. So you don't necessarily have to have live human musicians. And it is different than loops, right? Loops have been in this product in GarageBand for like decades at this point. But they are continuing to extend out what it can do for you. And so I think this will be, for people using Logic on an iPad, it's probably a pretty big day.
Yeah. And this is a category of software that also exists. Band in the Box is probably the most popular one. And it, where you can just load the program and then you can put in chord changes. Like you say, I want to play April in Paris, and you put in the chord changes for April in Paris, and you say, I want it with a, you know, moderate swing. And then it creates a bass track, a drum track, and a piano track, and you can play along with it. So this stuff has existed for a long time, but it's never been built in a program like Logic. And again, I just want to get my hands on it to see, like, is this like a competitor with that kind of music, or is it something? I'm not sure exactly what they're aiming at with this. And apps like Band in the Box are so good that I'll be very curious to see how it goes. Band in the Box also hires musicians to come in to record tracks, and it dynamically builds the audio with actual humans playing, whereas this is an AI model. So all of this is curious to me. I just want to get my hands on it.
Hmm.
Final Cut Pro 2. So we got the other Pro app got a lot of update and a couple big points. Let's start with the external drive support. You can create or open projects on an external storage device and import media without taking up space on the iPad. So
yeah,
when I said earlier, you may need a terabyte iPad for Final Cut. Well, maybe you don't now.
And on the iPad Pro in particular with Thunderbolt, you know, if you got a fast external SSD, this could be very useful. This was one of those things that when Final Cut first showed up on the iPad, a lot of people were like, hey, what's up with this? But they've remedied that. The thing that really took my breath away, though, was live multicam. So you can have an iPad as a director, and it's wirelessly connected to other iPads or iPhones that are, you know, around a set or whatever, and you can see what they're filming, either the and even change like focus and exposure if you want to. And then you can bring that footage wirelessly into Final Cut. So your preview isn't, you know, full 4K, but if you when you're done, it brings that footage in. This is really, really cool to do this in the traditional sense, like in Final Cut on the Mac. You're having, you know, multiple cameras, you import your footage, and Final Cut has a lot of tools for like lining those things up and then cutting in between them in multicam, and Final Cut's actually really, really easy. But yeah, this extends that ease of use to capture. And look, like, we know big YouTubers who use iPhone footage all the time, and I only know that because they've said it, not because you can ever spot it in their videos. And so for that sort of use case, you know, the iPhone's the best camera a lot of people have access to. And so to bring these tools over is really pretty awesome. I can't wait to see what people can do with this. And I think that doing it where, you know, you've got the iPad as sort of the central hub, and then you can bring that footage in, like, it all seems really well thought out. And, you know, folks like Tyler Stallman, I'm sure, are going to be putting this through its paces, and I can't wait to see what he says about it.
Yeah. But I think this also is very helpful to the prosumer kind of people that don't want to buy expensive equipment to do this type of live switching, but still would like the ability to use it. And I feel like it's going to be very positive for folks like that, which is a lot of YouTubers, to be honest. But
yeah,
but I'll be very curious to see how this all works. And they have an app out that you can now load on called Final Cut Camera App, which looks to me like more than just a live multicam app. It looks to me like just a great capture app to capture footage for Final Cut, even if you're not going to use this feature.
Yeah,
at least the way I understand it. So I'm going to be digging in on all this stuff as it becomes available.
Yeah, it seems very cool. And again, it feels like something Apple's talking to people who are using this. I also had the thought, you know, Apple's shooting all these videos on iPhones now, right? Like, they're very clear about that. I was like, huh, I wonder if someone at Apple is like, you know, it'd be cool if we could do this. And then they built it.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Just like Keynote used to be really good when Steve Jobs was using it.
Exactly.
It's still pretty good. I guess I shouldn't.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's totally fine.
Yeah, but it was really getting a lot more attention, I think, when he used it every 6 months.
Agreed.
Artificial intelligence to Final Cut Pro on the Mac. So it wasn't just for Final Cut Pro on iPad. Final Cut Pro on the Mac also got updated.
Yeah, they're bringing various sort of AI tools into Final Cut on the Mac. Being able to customize like the look of footage, so with like colors and filters, being able to do that really quickly, being able to take one look and apply it across multiple clips, these are things you can do in Final Cut now, but it seems like they're going to be much faster. And also searching and navigating the timeline. So this, I'm not quite sure what it actually is going to look like in practice, but My hope is that it's along the lines of like all the recognition that happens in photos. Like, if I have a project, I'm like, hey, where is the clip that, you know, someone's wearing a red shirt? Like, if I could find that very quickly in a big project, that would be awesome. We haven't seen the Mac stuff in action yet, at least of time of recording. So we'll follow up on that in the future, but they are spreading that, you know, machine learning / AI magic all over the place.
Yeah, and for me, like, what I'm looking for is a good example is color correction, which I don't feel like I'm very qualified to do.
Same.
And every time I try to do it, I make it worse. But if they've got an AI model that's like trained on 10,000 or 100,000 video color correction models, and, you know, I could just push a button and it would do what it thinks is best, that's always going to be better than what I do because of my lack of skill.
Yeah.
And so that makes my stuff better. Not necessarily the best. I think if somebody was an expert color correction person, they could probably do better than the AI. But for someone like me, it's a definite improvement. I get that same benefit with Pixelmator Pro. They have a bunch of AI training for picture correction, and often I'll just use the AI's idea instead of my own, and usually it looks better.
Yeah.
But okay, so we got some updates to the Pro apps, but, you know, iPad OS is still iPad OS. Yeah.
It is.
We both struggle. Well, you know, it shouldn't be a clone of the Mac. It shouldn't be try to be the best possible Mac, right? It's iPad. It's a different device, has a different feature set, different customer base. We both talked about friends of ours, like your dad and my sister, who love the iPad because of its simplicity. And they specifically left the Mac because of that. So that is a big part of the customer base for the iPad. But those people are not looking to stretch the limits. The thing that's difficult is when they say, oh, we made this new thing. It's got the M4 chip. It's the most powerful chip that Apple ships these days. And we put it in an iPad. And power users are sitting around scratching our heads trying to think, well, where am I going to need that power?
Yeah.
And I still can't record audio and participate in a Zoom call at the same time. You know, I still need to bring a laptop to record a podcast. I know that's a podcaster thing, but it's so basic and so easy on the Mac, and it's just not a thing on the iPad. And whatever it is that you do in terms of a power feature on the Mac, quite often they just aren't, there isn't a solution on the iPad.
Yeah, it's sort of the age old question. I wrote this blog post last night about it called "The Problem's Never the Hardware." And just the more I think about it, the more I sort of come to the feeling of like the iPad is still struggling to shake off its iPhone roots. And there's a lot of good that comes with that history, right? That it can run the same apps that the iPhone does. And it's intuitive and billions of people know how to use it. But for those people who want more, whether in terms of just a general computer or something, you know, more powerful for professional work, that's where the iPad struggles. And you're totally right. Like when they get on stage, like the exact quote, I wrote it down. We're going to crush the limits of what you can do on iPad. Like, okay, John Ternus, like that's great that it's faster. And, you know, in some ways the iPad Pro is going to be in some remarks will be the fastest computer Apple sells. And so, you know, some benchmarks, the OS and the software still hold it back. And that has really gotten to a point where it's almost comical, kind of in a sad way. And some people look at this and say, well, turn it into a Mac. And like, there's valid things behind that argument, I think. But then we have two Macs, and I'm not going to pretend that I know what they should do with the iPad. But clearly, I think for people who want to push it further, they've got to do something. But then on the other hand, and I'm very curious to see what you think about this. On the other hand, I wonder if Apple's actually okay with it. You know, there was a period where the Mac was on the brink, now 7-8 years ago. It really seemed like the Mac was going to be pushed aside and the iPad was going to be the future. And that's how Apple talked about it. They don't talk about it that way anymore. They seem very happy that the Mac and iPad coexist. And on paper, they're basically the same size business. Like in the quarterly reports, the Mac and the iPad are siblings in terms of revenue. And Apple's fine if you buy both or just buy one or the other. And maybe they don't see this as an actual problem. Like if the iPad fits your needs, that's great. Buy that. If you need more, we have the MacBook Air or the MacBook Pro right here, and you know, go over to that. I just don't know how they reconcile that without coming out and like saying it really clearly. And I don't think they're going to do that. So I don't know where it lands. Like, what do you think Apple thinks when they look at this and say, well, gosh, there are people who want more, but we haven't delivered it?
Yeah, I think they're probably okay with that. I mean, that was my revelation a few years ago. It's like, no, that Apple sees the iPad as this thing that does good notes really well, and that you can sit on your couch and watch Netflix. And yeah, you know, I feel like largely they see it as what it currently is. I mean, they've known about friction points for power users on many levels for years, and they've not taken much, you know, effort to address any of them. Like, but you know, the pencil is a good example. The Pro Pencil addresses friction for people who want to draw, and they feel this is the device to draw on. So they're going to go deep down that stack and add barrel roll and all this stuff to make it better. But for those of us that want to record a podcast, they're like, no, you guys, you can use a Mac. It's fine.
Yeah.
You know, I think that I just don't think they care that much about it. And what they're saying is use it for what we're selling it, what we're advertising that it does, And if you want to do something else, you probably should use different hardware. And that's fine, except for this is where I have trouble. It's like, yeah, but then you're making these super powerful ones that would be so good at these other things too. But, and I'm not exactly sure what the power is for. Well, I guess, you know, this Final Cut is a good example. I bet that that, you know, that new M4 chip is going to make this Final Cut Pro 2, these features, really great. But maybe it's me bringing my own bias and prejudice. Like, well, I'm not going to be out shooting that many multicam Final Cut Pro things. So maybe, right. You know, I should just accept that I don't need this. But yeah, it is a weird feeling, but it's always the same. You're right. I mean, every time there's new hardware, you're like, yeah, this is great, but the old hardware is still great too. And I'm still having trouble stressing it. And you know, every time you hear about Apple saying, well, we're not selling that many iPads. Well, the reason is you buy one and it works forever.
Yeah.
Which is great. You know, that's good. But they're not making the operating system grow to a level to makes you feel like you need to get new hardware.
Yeah. I think that's exactly right.
If I was in charge, I think I would try to keep the simplicity of the iPad intact. But I would also look at the well-known friction points for people who want to use it for more. Like, I think the file system needs work. You know, features like multiple audio and some of this other like production stuff that people bump into on it. I would fix that stuff. And I don't think simple users need to even know that it's been fixed. I think you could do this in a way where it just gives some more hooks to the pro apps to do more. And I'd like to see that happen. But to a certain extent, some of it's just never going to be different, you know, or never going to be the same. Sometimes, like, so I have a little room at my studio that I work in. I'm in here all day, sometimes many hours. And in the evening, sometimes I just want to go in the other room and work at a different place. And I always have the question, do I bring the MacBook Air or do I bring the iPad? And for me, it's about 50-50, but it's entirely based on what I'm going to do. And If I can bring the iPad, I will. But often I just need to bring the laptop because the stuff I want to do isn't going to be possible.
Yeah. And maybe in a way you're at Apple's ideal customer that you've purchased both. And like Apple for years has been obsessed with this idea of like, you're going to move fluidly between your devices as the moment needs, right? You're going to be working on a keynote on your iPad, and then you're going to pick up your iPhone to take a picture, and it's going to slingshot into Keynote on the Mac, which you also have it. Like, and a lot of this stuff works. Like, to their credit, they've done a lot of good things, like glue their devices together at the edges. And Maybe it's just that we need to kind of understand that better. But I do think clarity from Apple would be good here. This is fine that this is just what this platform is, but then don't say sentences like you're going to crush the limits of what you can do on iPad. If you're going to do things like Stage Manager and bring them both to the iPad and the Mac, like those are all very confusing messages. And I for one, would vote for some clarity.
Yeah, agreed. And but, you know, at the same time, like the stuff I do on the iPad is better on the iPad. Like managing my task system is easier on an iPad than it is on a Mac. The touch interface, the just kind of the visual interaction of it with my finger, and it just works better. And basic transcription, you know, dictation and transcription on this, you know, magic piece of glass is better. So I'm aware of that, and I don't want them to go so far toward a Mac that loses that, you know, that what makes it unique.
Yeah.
But I do think we're not alone in wanting it to do more. And it doesn't seem like they're that interested in it for kind of the power user stuff. So, you know, kind of getting back to my conclusion of a few years ago, okay, well, just accept the iPad for what it is. I mean, the moment, I've shared this before, but so forgive me if you've heard this, but the moment of clarity came to me at the dinner table when my kids were talking about, because they were both in college at the time, about how their iPad Airs were so useful to them. And they're using good notes in class, and they're doing all the stuff that the iPad is good at. And I realized, oh yeah. So if you just use it within the constraints they give you, it's actually not a bad device. It's just when you try to turn it into something else that you make yourself nuts.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what are you buying? Are you going to buy anything?
Not right now. I do plan on going to see these devices. So these ship on May 15th. So I assume they will be in stores that same day. So I have that morning marked off to go to the Apple store and at least have some hands-on time. But the iPad mini is meeting my needs. Like, there are times where I wish I had something else with a keyboard, but I don't think those use cases, again, it's mostly like going to meetings outside the office where I'm not working. I'm just, you know, taking notes, looking at a docket, that sort of thing. I don't think that's a big enough use case for this, but I do plan on going to see them. I'm very curious about the hardware. But what about you? I mean, we opened this kind of talking about our iPad usage, and where do you think you're going to go?
I'm itchy to get a new one. I don't feel compelled to get a new one, if that makes sense. So mine, the main one I'm using is 6 years old and it works great. My wife, her iPad is, I don't know how old it is, but it's old. it's much older than 6 years. She wants a new one. And so I'm trying to decide, do I just get her an Air and keep my 11 inch Pro, or do I get myself a new one and give her my 6 year old 11 inch Pro, which is perfectly fine. Do I sell the big one? Cause I have a 13 inch, but again, it's 6 years old. I don't think Apple's going to give me hardly any money for it. So part of me is like, well, maybe I'll keep the 13 inch around just for like sheet music and things like that. And get an 11. I honestly don't know where I'm at on this. I'm out of town next week. So I'm going to wait till they're in the Apple store. I'm going to go and check them out. And I could walk out of there with a new iPad Air for my wife or a new iPad Pro for me. I know everybody listening is rolling their eyes. They know what I'm going to do. I don't know. I just don't know. I mean, I guess I could also just get Daisy a refurb one too, because she'd be perfectly happy with anything that works at this point.
Yeah.
Part of me is like, it's like, I just don't know. It's like, I was asking myself this morning before we recorded, like, what am I doing on the existing one that would be significantly better on the new one? And I don't think anything, honestly. I've played with Logic and Final Cut on this one, but not very well because it's so old. So I guess maybe I would use that more. I just need to think about it. But there's a part of me that would like to get a new iPad. It's been long enough, but I'm not sure where I'm going to end up on this stuff. I'm very confused right now.
I don't think you're alone in that. I think there's a lot of folks just, you know, online the 24 hours after the event talking to friends like, yeah, this seems incredible. OLED would be sick, but my 2020 iPad Pro or my 2018 iPad Pro is still totally meeting my needs. And I think I say to that, like, well, it'll be there when you need it. You know, if you've got a 2018 and, you know, eventually you need to upgrade, well, this will be great when it's there. I don't think we got to rush out and do anything.
Yeah. Okay, well, either way, there we have it. New iPad hardware, gang. Let us know what you think. You can head over to talk.macpowerusers.com, join up in the forum, see what you think. Good on Apple for updating the line. A little disappointed the mini didn't get added to with this. I feel like this would have been a nice point to get them, just get it all fixed and updated. But, you know, the mini has its own audience, and I'm sure they'll get that one updated soon enough. In the Max Markey Labs, every time we talk about iPad, there's always people that say they want an iPad Mini Pro.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. And I kind of agree. Like what I said earlier about the phone applies to the iPad, you know, standard and pro models in three sizes. Why not? We are the Mac Power Users. You can find us at relay.fm/MPU. If you are a More Power Users subscriber, stick around. We're going to be talking about where we think the M4 goes next. Thank you to our sponsors, 1Password, ExpressVPN, NetSuite, and Indeed. And we'll see you next time.